Morning. My name is Tracy and I am an alcoholic. This is my home group. My sobriety date is July 22nd of 2007. For those that don't do math, I'm almost at 12 years. I feel like I just did this, so I hope I'm not going to bore anybody, but I'm not going to dwell too much on the pre-recovery, but just enough to qualify myself, I guess. I was the firstborn of four kids with my parents, and we lived in Germany when I was born, and my dad was in the Army. My dad was an alcoholic, and the reason I'm actually starting my story at that point is I think that's where my story actually starts, with the relationship with alcohol. I have pictures, proof, that I liked beer when I was in diapers. So my dad said that he would sit down one of his beers and I'd crawl as fast as I could over there to get whatever was left in the beer bottle. And there's pictures of that. So I have to think, I can't imagine that I thought it tastes good. I think that probably it was doing something for me way back then too. So, my dad, is an alcoholic. And I'm not going to tell his story, but I think it's an important part of my story just for the fact that alcoholic was a word that kept coming up all through my childhood. The Serenity Prayer, I do know that at least he went to one or two AA meetings, because I'd find little cards with that Serenity Prayer on it. And that Serenity Prayer meant something to me way back then. For some reason, maybe I foresaw my future or something, that would be something special to me then. But we moved to Colorado, and then we moved to Ohio. And I truly believe that this disease does center mostly in our minds, and that and the physical allergy on top of that. But so my thinking that preceded the time that I ever started drinking was sick. And I can remember my earliest thoughts of like walking down the street in front of our house, and I could only have been like probably 7 or 8 years old, and thinking that it is just me against this world, that I am like here on my own, that I have nobody on my side, that I, you know, just like I was apart from everything at that point in my life so early on. I have no idea why, what made me think like that. It was just, that was my thinking. And I used to run away from home all the time. We lived right off Lake Erie, and I'd run away from home in the middle of winter with nothing. You know, it's like I don't know how far I think I was going to go, but I just was always felt like I was trying to get away from something, and I think that something was me and my thinking. My dad's worst drinking took place probably during that time frame, and he was just the drinker that when payday came, he disappeared and we didn't see him for days, and then he'd be back like in the hospital or the mental ward or something like that. So it was I didn't know what being an alcoholic meant then. I would tell, well, my dad's an alcoholic, and it was like his alibi, you know, his excuse, whatever that meant, for this is the reason why he's doing what he's doing. But I never really knew, even when I had a good idea that I was probably an alcoholic, I still did not know what that meant until I walked in these doors. And, I don't know, maybe I would have got here sooner if I really did know the meaning of that. I'm not sure. But I think that my motivation most of my life was fear. I was fearful of everything. We eventually moved here in 73 because it was a geographic cure for my dad, which probably was the longest period of time that he went without drinking. But, of course, it resumed because we know that's how that works. But that's how we ended up here. And actually, I was right down the road from the Howe place when we first moved here, so that kind of seemed like it was meant to be, too, ironically. Let me start this. My first memories of drinking, I remember I was probably about 10 or 11, and it was New Year's Eve, and my mom allowed me and my sisters to have some champagne, and they were like, it was awful, wanting nothing to do with it. I'm like, good, I'll have the rest of it. And my mom was like, you're going to feel so bad tomorrow. And I woke up and I felt fine and let's do this again. And that was like at 10, you know. So, like I said, I still think I had that relationship with it because it took me away from where I was at in my head. And then the real first choice to drink, go out and drink, it was a babysitting job that I had with a friend. Thank God the friend was there too. It was for her sister, and they had all this alcohol in their house. And so the amount that I consumed, and as sick as I got, I should have died that day. And it literally, I kept having to call my mom and saying, oh, well, they're going to be gone another day, so we need to stay here a little longer, just because I was so sick I could not go home. Because she'd want to know how I was so sick. I was that deathly ill. But as soon as as soon as that was over and I recovered from that, it's like, that was really cool. That was really fun. I can't wait to do that again. You know, I was like, who thinks like that? I mean, who thinks like that? That to be that sick. I did really well throughout school, I think because I was always motivated by fear. I drank, I partied, and drugs are a part of my story too. I have to put that in there. You could hand me anything, any kind of pill or whatever, I wouldn't even question, I'd take it. I was totally fearless in that area. It's just like, whatever it is, if it's going to make me not feel like I'm feeling right now, I'm good with it, you know, just keeping me out of the moment. For the most part though, I think, especially as I got older, I think that the drugs played the part of allowing me to be able to drink more alcohol, for longer periods of time. And there's not any of those drugs that I did that I cannot walk away from, whereas I cannot walk away from alcohol. I did well. I actually even graduated high school. I had no desire to further my education, though, because I hated school. I was good at it, but I hated it. It was just, I couldn't stand being anywhere I was told I had to be, I guess. And it's that always, that feeling, I got to get away. But anyway, so I ended up, I actually, right out of school, started working in this giant toy store. In the parking lot, there was 3 bars. And I was like, that was so cool. At lunch break, you know, which bar are we going to? You know, and that was back in the 2-for-1 and 3-for-1 days, you know. So we'd be in there with a whole table full of beers and stuff on our lunch break. So I think that was a good point in the acceleration of my drinking for sure. And then I got into, from going into those bars, and I started thinking, you know, I think I could do this. I think I could wait tables. I think I could make a lot more money than I'm making in this toy store. So then I did get into the bar business, and I was in the bar business for 25 years. I worked at a bar in Smyrna that was probably and may still be one of the busiest bars in the state. And drinking for the employees was actually encouraged, right, Becky? And I did my very best for the longest time not to drink while I worked, just because we had to carry our money on us, and I was just afraid I was going to always, you know, lose my money or something. But like I said, it was encouraged, and so then I got into that too. And you know, I still, though, never really considered my drinking to be not normal, because all the people that I was with were drinking the same way I was, you know. I was surrounding myself with people with the same habits that I had. I had some medical issues, and I had to do a lot of research to try to figure out what was going on, and part of that, I stopped drinking for like 9 months. And we were all a group of us went to a restaurant, and everybody was I'm like, you know what? I'm going to have a glass of wine. It's, you know, I'm doing pretty good. I'm going to have a glass of wine. And I can remember to this day the exact feeling that that glass of wine gave me after 9 months. It was just like I melted, and just everything just like, you know. It was just, and right then and there, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to always have to have alcohol. That's the vent. That's the way I can release my anxieties and everything. And that was it. Game on after that, you know. It started out, I mean, we had so much fun. I still think back, everything did rotate, or, you know, alcohol was at the center of everything that I did. But, you know, we'd get the group that all worked together at that bar. We'd, you know, go to football games and baseball games and whitewater rafting and all kinds of events, you know. We just had a good time. And that's how drinking was a part of my life. It was fun. It was really fun. And until it wasn't. And so, you know, just it was gradual. I never really had, you know, not too bad of things. I mean, when I put myself in dangerous places and had injuries and things like that, but, you know, nothing that was that bad to, you know, really make me think about what was going on, I guess. And then I changed jobs and moved out here and had a different circle of friends that were even greater drinkers than the ones that I was with before, and it was kind of a keep up with them type thing going on there too, I think. And but there was a, it's like crossing an invisible line or something where it changed. Like there was no turning back, and it was becoming less fun and more necessary to drink. It just wasn't like a choice anymore. And I don't know at the time if I actually realized that I didn't have a choice in the matter of drink. I think probably in the back of my mind, but, you know, more when the drinking was fun, the next day or 2 days later, you got with your friends and you started reminiscing about, oh yeah, that was pretty funny, and laughing and all that kind of stuff. When it started becoming not fun anymore is when you didn't want to hear about, when I didn't want to hear about what I did or what I said or who I talked to, you know, and then you start realizing, oh God, you know, what's going on here, you know. I started, I did get, one DUI. I should have had a million DUIs, to be honest with you. You know, the thing where you have to look to see if your car is even outside the next day, you know, and then it's there, and then you're like, oh, great. How did that happen? You know, I can actually remember even driving, closing one eye so I could try to figure out which was the real line, center line, you know. It was just like that. I mean, really, that scares the daylights out of me today. Like, there might be somebody else doing that same thing, you know. But, you know, it was bad. But nothing could make me, you know, stop drinking. Basically, I just could not stop drinking. But that DUI was, that was a critical turning point. It actually accelerated my drinking, if that makes any sense. But I remember when I was in the jail cell, just peace. It was the weirdest thing. I mean, this peace just overcame me, like it was a turning point or something, and I knew it. I didn't know how or why or what, but it was just this overwhelming sense of peace when I was in there. But my drinking actually accelerated. I don't know. I thought, okay, well, I've already experienced the worst. I've been to jail or whatever. But it did. Part of that, the DUI thing was, you know, I could only drive to and from work for a year, but that was perfect too because I worked at a bar, there was a liquor store across the street, and a grocery store in the shopping center, so that's all I needed to drive to, basically. I do remember, I had to tell my mom, like, because she couldn't understand why I couldn't come over to her house and things like that, about the DUI, and that I might have a problem, and she acted like she already knew that, and I was very offended. But I tried going to church for a while, thinking that might help, and that didn't work too good for me at all. I did go for, the part of the DUI thing too was they send you to that DUI school, and they ask you this. I had to fill out this questionnaire that had the stupidest questions I've ever heard in my whole entire life, and somehow I failed that, and they knew from that I was an alcoholic, and I had crossed that line at that point of no return, and I was so offended by that. I was so offended. I'm like, questions that didn't even make any sense, that you wouldn't even relate to it, but I don't know, it's psychology or something, I guess. But anyway, so I, the last, well, first of all, my sister and my mom were my crusaders. They're the ones that really did everything that they could to try to get me sober before I was ready to get sober. My sister kidnapped me one time in a blackout, because I'm a blackout drinker. I came to, like, almost down to Macon in her car, like, having no clue how I even got there. I've actually come out of a blackout standing in a checkout at the cash register, and I look in my cart, and it's, like, full of wine. I'm like, oh, okay, I get it. It's like, you know, like, beam me up, Scotty, you know, like, all of a sudden I'm here, and I'm like, oh, well, I got a grocery cart full of wine. I'm good. I actually mourned blackouts too, but I'll get to that in a bit. Actually just forgot what I was talking about.
Your sister.
Oh, yeah, thank you. But she took me down to her house, so I had no vehicle, nothing. She just came, got me in this blackout, brought me down to her house, and she was going to get me sober. So first of all, she tried calling all these places to try to get me in. They were like, oh, bring her in while she's still drunk. Bring her in while she's still drunk. And one place wanted her to put me on a plane, and I'm like, you know, neither one of us can afford this. We'll figure out something else. I said, just take me to a bookstore and I'll get some books on this. And I had already been given a big book because my mom had taken me to a meeting at Hillside, actually, and they had given me a big book, and I had that book, but every time I opened that book, it might as well have been written in a foreign language. I mean, it made no sense to me whatsoever. I could not connect. I said, just bring me to the bookstore. I remember going to the bookstore and buying every book on recovery that they had in there, and I remember trying to even sign my credit card slip, and my hand was just shaking like this. I couldn't even sign my own name. And I read those books inside and out, and I'm like, I can do this. I've got this figured out. I don't need any, I don't need rehab. I don't need AA. I've got this now. And so she thought kind of differently. But there was a place down there that agreed to allow me, I think it's called the Phoenix or something like that, to come in on an outpatient thing where I could come in during the day, spend the day, do their little group stuff, and then leave and then come back. But one of the things was I had to pass a breathalyzer test every time I showed up. And now I don't have a car. My sister's not letting me out of her sight. There's no way I've had any kind of alcohol whatsoever. And I cannot pass that breathalyzer test we stopped even trying at like 28, 29 days. My body was not metabolizing the alcohol out of my system at that point. They got new breathalyzers. They're like, don't use mouthwash, don't brush your teeth. They tried everything. And I was like a phenom to them. You know, they were like, how can this even be? How can this even be? I'm like, you tell me. But so she tried, but she went out of town for a weekend, and I had managed to talk her into, and this is another good one. I managed to talk her into taking me back to my house long enough just to spend the night, just to get stuff to bring back, because I was going to go get a job so that I could be under her care. And I knew in the back of my mind that I had liquor hid in a closet at home, and that's the only thing that was on my mind, if I can get her to get me back to that bottle. And that, in fact, should tell you something, because I hid liquor all over my house, yet I lived alone. So figure that. But anyway, so I did talk her into it, and so I pretended to be back there at working at my desk, getting stuff done, and drinking that bottle of liquor while I was out there. And she knew. I mean, she knew. So the next day, I was, like, refusing to go back with her, but then I realized how hurt she was, so I agreed to go back to her house, and then so I had my car then at that point, because I was supposed to get a job. So she went out of town for a weekend, and I ended up taking off, leaving her a note, and coming back down here. And at that point, that was 2 years before I actually got sober, she and my mom both decided that we're done. We can't watch you kill yourself. When you're ready, let us know. We'll be there for you, but we don't. So at this point in my life, I literally had not one human being that wanted anything to do with me whatsoever. Not family, not friends, not anything. I had these jobs that I held for such a long time in the bar business, which is rare in itself. But in the last 2 years, I probably went through at least 9 jobs, all in the bar business, because I would do my best to pick up shifts to keep me at work. But I knew as soon as I got the day off, I was going to the liquor store. I'd drink it myself into a blackout, and I would have no idea how long I'd been in that blackout. So I'm like, oh, all right, well, I can't go back to that job. And then that would be a good reason to drink some more. And then when I finally got out of that blackout, then I'd get another job, and the same thing would just keep repeating and repeating for those last 2 years. I don't even know how I lived to feel those 2 years, to tell you the truth, being totally isolated like that. It was the credit card thing where you're like pulling money from one credit card to pay another credit card, because that's how I was having to live, because I wasn't getting enough work in it, and at the end I couldn't work at all. But I physically, I think my body was just, my organs were just basically shutting down. I would drink myself into, I would go, the quantities, that's one thing that does still surprise me though, because I'm different. To hear some of these guys in here share what they drank, and I'm like, and every time I'm like, that's it? That's all? You know, because they're talking about this large quantity. I'm like, oh my God, literally the quantities of alcohol that I consumed was phenomenal. But you know, I'd go into blackouts and I come out, and I honestly have no idea. I actually got an alarm clock that had the days of the week on it so that I would at least know what day it was. But then I realized there was times I had no idea what month it was. Because I'd buy so much alcohol and drink it. And I knew when I was coming out of a blackout that I could search that whole house and there was not going to be a drop of alcohol left, because that's the only reason I was coming out of that blackout, is because the alcohol was finally wearing down a little bit. I remember coming out of a blackout one time, and I was so, I could literally not sleep for 7 days. And that was probably worse than any experience I had in my whole drinking, is that not being able to go to sleep, because that's all I wanted to do, and I could not sleep for that long a period of time. I went through DTs, had hallucinations, was still just like calling my mom, telling her all this crazy stuff that was going on. I could not look at myself in the mirror anymore. I know my body was just shutting down. I have no idea why my last blackout was my last blackout. I remember coming out of it. I had just gotten a job, renewed my liquor permit, and went to the liquor store and went into a blackout. And I obviously knew that job was gone too. And when I came out of that blackout, I just remember screaming, how did this ever happen? This started out as fun. This was fun. What happened? And just screaming. And I know today, I didn't know then, that was my bottom. That was that moment of clarity that I can no longer deny the truth of my existence. That was it in that moment. And I made up my mind that I was going to come here. I already knew about the Howe Place. I actually had customers when I worked down the street that would come do a bunch of shots and go to the Howe Place. Like, I don't think that's how that's supposed to work, but you know, go ahead. They used to invite me, come on, come with us. I'm like, well, I don't think so. But anyway, so it took me literally like 3 days to be able to physically leave the house to come up here. And I was shaking and crying, and I was a wreck. And I remember Daniel sitting out on the front porch, and it took me forever to get out of my car. And I started walking in, and he's like, you look like you're scared to death. And I'm like, well, maybe I am. And I just walked right by him, you know. At the end of that meeting, two people came up to me, Carmen and Joanna. And Joanna's sweetheart, it's gonna be okay, being her sweet self. And then Carmen says, girl, you need some chocolate. I'm like, what does chocolate have to do anything? I remember calling my mom, said, well, two really nice people said hello to me. I think one's crazy, and I think I might ask the other to sponsor me. I'm not sure. But I'm like, I have no idea what chocolate has to do anything. But actually, I was right. She was kind of crazy, but I didn't get the chocolate thing now. I don't remember anything about that meeting other than that, to tell you the truth. But it just goes to show that even just, I remember that. 12 years ago, I remember those two women coming up to me in that meeting, you know. I stayed at the Howe Place for 3 months. I did not do anything else except for, I did go, I had somebody here friend me and met me down at the extension on Thursdays for JJ's Power Hour at the men's extension. And I remember the first time I walked into the extension, I sat down. I don't know if any of you, if you guys are familiar with the place or not, sat down for the Power Hour. And for the first time in my whole entire life, I felt like I belonged there, belonged someplace. I could fit in anywhere, but I never felt like I belonged anywhere, and I felt it there. And I'm like, wow, who would have guessed these are my people? You know, it was like, really? This is it? But that place is near and dear. Both the men's and women's extensions are very near and dear to my heart today. So I met this girl and started talking to her in here, and she kept telling me, you need to get a sponsor, you need to get a sponsor. And she kept talking about how great her sponsor was, and I'm like, one day I just said, well, why can't I have yours? And she says, oh, okay, I'll introduce you guys. Well, she introduced me to my sponsor, Tracy, and then neither one of us ever saw her again, and I just think that is definitely synchronicity without a doubt, because that was meant to be. Tracy's still my sponsor today. I would have done, and I was so desperate when I got here. I don't care what you told me to do, I would have done it. I just needed this so bad. I had so many issues with the God thing. If anybody mentioned God, I honed in on you to make sure you were like not bullshitting, that you were actually believe what you were saying and stuff like that, you know. So I just sort of used your idea of God for a while, you know, higher power. Today I don't even try to define what my higher power is. I like maybe the infinite sum of everything, you know, works for me okay. I, you know, immediately started with the started, I think it was day 7 that I had my sponsor, and we started working the steps. I remember thinking very shortly, it was only a few weeks into this, that one day I'm sitting in here, and I'm just like, one day it's like, I have not thought about alcohol. Like for 30 years, this is the first time I've not thought about alcohol. Every single day I thought about alcohol, and I've not. So I knew right then and there that something was happening. I don't know why or how, but something was happening. Something was changing, and it was good. And so then I just hung on just, you know, even harder to that, you know, because I knew something was working. And I actually started having anxiety attacks. I'd be sitting in here, and I'd start sweating and shaking, and I was like, oh, my God, what is going on? And I thought, well, there's got to be a thought behind this that I don't know what it is that's causing this. And so every time it happened, I'd start paying attention. And the thought was that nothing is ever going to be the same again, and that scared the daylights out of me. My job rotated around alcohol. My whole life rotated around alcohol. I mean, every vacation, everything I did, that was planned first. If I was going to somebody's house, well, do I need to bring my own? Do I need to stay? Are they going to have enough? I mean, everything was wrong, and nothing was going to be the same again. And that obviously was a very good thing, but at the time, it scared the daylights out of me, and that's what was causing anxiety. But once I found out what that was, I was good. I was okay. I actually stopped having the anxiety attacks. I also mourned blackouts. I really mourned blackouts, because in a blackout, I had no recollection of my thinking. You know, I was not connected to that. It was my true escape from my thoughts. So I did have a hard time with the thought that, wow, I'm never going to go into another blackout again, you know, which that sounds crazy, but it's true. There's something called Novalco, and it's just a way to take a group of people through the steps together. You still have your sponsors and everything, and it uses the big book and the 12 and 12. My sponsor and her mother were both facilitating one of those, and that's how I was brought through the steps. That's how I like to bring my sponsees through the steps as well. You can, you know, do it anyway. Well, I just needed something structured. There's a lot on paper, you know, like questions and assignment and stuff like that, and I needed that at that point in my life. Today, I sponsor. I highly recommend that you do not miss out on that. I think that's what keeps me the closest to this program and growing, is watching these girls, watching that light come on, girls. There's nothing better than that. There's just nothing better than that. There's something that I talked about last time, and I may have dwelled on it a little bit too much, but I am not going to not bring it up because I think it's that important. through my sobriety, I've had, you know, spiritual bottoms, I guess you could say. I never thought about drinking, but I know that if I ever drink again, I will have not have thought about it till after the fact. This disease is cunning, baffling, powerful, and it sets itself up without you even knowing it, I think. I have to make sure that I do what I'm supposed to do, and I don't know which is most important of the things that the tools that they give us in this book, so I try to do it all the time. I just happen to believe that if I go back out, I don't think I'll make it back in here. I was on death's door, and I think that's exactly where I'll end up. I don't know if my ego would allow that, you know, and I don't want to take that chance, to tell you the truth. So I try to do everything that, and especially stay connected. But the bottoms that I experienced very early on, like just a few months into this, I got some really bad news, and I was so upset, and I jumped in my car, I grabbed my keys, and I was backing out of my driveway, and I did not have a conscious thought of where I was going. Today, I'm pretty sure I was going to the liquor store. And the book, the story Acceptance, that paragraph in there that we're all so very familiar with, that just was right there in my face. And I stopped my car before I got out of the driveway, pulled back in there, and went and got my book and read that, and I swear that that paragraph saved my life that day. I know I was going to drink that day. And then later on, my sponsor told me that it was 8 years before she got her first sponsee through the steps, and I was like, what? That's crazy. And she was at a spiritual bottom at that point, at that eight-year mark, and until somebody walked into her life that she helped through the steps, got all the way through the steps. And that was her turning point. But right about 8 years, I think, I had that same kind of a thing, that spiritual bottom. You know, it was just, I don't know. Don't really know why. I just, you know, backed off everything, basically, I think. And somebody walked into my life that I helped through the steps, and that changed everything. That sponsorship is so important. Then the other is hormones, and this is what I talked about last time. I don't think that that is, you know, it's not an outside subject because it definitely can affect your sobriety. I went through such a hormonal change that, and people think I'm kidding when I'm saying this, but I'm seriously not, and if you're around me during that period of time, you'll know that I'm not, that I would literally go from suicidal to homicidal in a matter of 30 seconds. And it was crazy, and it was just going on, and I tried everything out there to help me with that, and I thought, oh my God, I know where this is going to go, because I can't take this anymore. I cannot take the way I feel. I cannot take my you know, this is, I'm so spiritually disconnected, you know, at this point because of this. It just feels like something's taken over me. And it was just one of those synchronicity things as well, that I got an answer for myself. I got something that helps me. But I thought, you know what, and this is right about 10 years, in 10 years of going to meetings, not one person has ever mentioned this, and this is probably the closest I ever came to going back out and drinking again, you know. So I think it's important. So if you are feeling that, and young or old, and men have hormones too, or they have wives as well, or sisters or whatever, so be aware that is something that you have to stay on top of, because it can literally take you back out there again, you know, and going back out can be a death sentence for sure, definitely for me, I know. Today, it seems like I like to keep going through the steps, and really working with your sponsees is basically going through the steps every time too, because you have to take, you get that little voice saying, hypocrite, hypocrite, hypocrite. I'm telling them what they should be doing. I'm thinking, when's the last time you did that? You know, so that kind of keeps me in line there. But I think that, you know, a lot of people say, yeah, once you do it, you're good, you know, as long as you do your daily maintenance and all that kind of stuff. But to tell you, I want more. And that's always been my thinking, I guess, with drugs and alcohol too, but I'm applying it here is a little bit better. I want the most that I can get. You know, I want to keep growing and keep learning, and it's been, and boy, it's really sped up right now too all of a sudden. But now that I can see clearly, more clearly again. But I think my recent lessons are about allowing and gratitude. So much of my problems, you know, it's all based in fear, but it's trying to control everything. And so the practice of, and I've just been set up for this and into positions to practice this, is to just allow. To practice that pause and allow and just see what happens. And it is amazing to me I spend so much less energy and things turn out so much better when I do that, when I'm not trying to run the show. It was like, why did I take on that job in the first place? You know, it was like, didn't pay well. But the payoff for this is huge. So that's, I think, the lesson that I'm at right now. And, I forgot what I was going to say again. The other lesson, okay. Allowing and, gratitude. How can I forget that? They used to, you know, the book uses the language of joy, you know, that word joy, you know, and I'm like, well, isn't that the same thing as happy or whatever? What is this joy that they talk about in the book? And I discovered that. And that, I think, is a direct result of gratitude. I can literally get so overwhelmed today with gratitude that it just takes me to my knees, basically. It is just amazing, and it brings me joy, and I have so much to be grateful for. You know, thank God for AA, you know, for one. Thank you for all showing up here. I mean, look how many people sitting in this room right now, you know, it's awesome. I highly recommend service work as well. I've been GSR for a couple different groups. That is such a neat experience. We need each other. You know, we need each other. I went to the international convention that they had here in Atlanta, and boy, I tell you what experience that was. That was like 70,000 people from all over this world. I actually volunteered for it, and one of the meeting rooms was the Japanese meetings. And I had no idea what they were saying, but I knew what they were saying. You know, I mean, it was just fascinating. It was like, wow, it's the same stuff over there. You know, I mean, it was just mind blowing. You know, it was just it's a great experience, and I feel very privileged to be able to experience that kind of stuff. You know, you're in that. You got 70,000 people in the stadium, and they're saying the Serenity Prayer, you know, and oh my gosh, the energy from that is just incredible, you know. I mean, it's just totally incredible. People used to say, I'm grateful to be an alcoholic, and I'm like, yeah, right. I am grateful to be an alcoholic, you know. I mean, I truly am grateful to have been a recovered alcoholic, we'll put it that way. I owe so much to this program, I really do. Something else I was going to say too. Oh well, maybe I'm finished. What's that? Amends. What amends have I made? Oh yeah. Well, that's huge too. My mom and my sister were my biggest amends, actually. And thank you, because that just reminded me of something, too. We just buried my brother-in-law last weekend. He was killed in a motorcycle wreck, and that was my sister's husband that tried to help me get sober. Because of this program, I was able to be there for that, you know, to support her and her kids and her family. And I felt like that was a little, you know, payback for everything that I had put her through, you know. It's a huge thing to, life still comes at us, and we all know that. And there's people in this room right now that I have watched them walk through some of the worst things that you can experience as a human being and not have to drink, you know. And because of that, I know that no matter whatever happens, I never have to drink, you know. But to be there for your loved ones and your friends, where I never was, I was always absent. Even when I was there, I was absent. You know, there's nothing. I mean, that it's incredible to be able to experience that. Darn, there's something else. I'm not supposed to be talking about that. It just will not come back to me. It was almost there. But anyway, but I am grateful for this. I plan on continuing to do what I'm supposed to do, hopefully. you know, I'll say this too. I kind of got lost a little bit out there, trying to seek answers that aren't there, aren't available to us. You know, I think Dr. Bob's like called this as kindergarten, spiritual kindergarten, but I went seeking for answers, you know, trying to define a higher power and why are we here and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I got a little lost in all that, you know. I find that what I really needed to do is just keep it basic and simple. I don't have to have the answers. I'm not in control. I don't need the answers anymore. So that kind of got me off on a little path, too. It's just things that you need to be aware of, you know, that can throw you off a little bit. The ego's always at work, you know, always at work trying to set you off the path. But hopefully that won't happen anymore. And I guess I just cannot remember what it was that I was going to say. As soon as I sit down, I'm going to. So if I run back up here real quick, you'll know. But anyway, thank you for asking me to do this. I appreciate it.